So we thought of playing the central piece now in a manner where people can just walk in and out, go for a coffee, go to the toilet, discuss a little bit. So this is, we haven't tried it in another context, so we'll just try it now. This is very welcoming for new neurodiverse subjectivities, as Leslie and David told us. So we will play the composition, which is called an excerpt of this composition, which is a work we did on sonic memory. And then I will talk about it right afterwards. And I think I will attempt a grand conceptual leap with linking the ideas that stemmed from making this work to this to the work we're doing, focused work we're doing within BR for audibility, namely the experience, the deaf experience, and the ways of the deaf with sound and hearing. So I hope you enjoy a relaxed performance for to begin with.
Είναι οι ντουντούκες και ήχοι των διαδηλώσεων.
Thank you. Θυμάμαι τις διαδηλώσεις που κάναμε εμείς οι μαθητές φοιτητές εκεί γύρω στο Πολυτεχνείο για το 114 και με σύνθημα ψωμί, παιδεία, ελευθερία σαν γεγονός. Αυτό το θυμάμαι. Είναι ο αγώνας που πρέπει να κάνει ο πολίτης για την περιφρούρηση της δημοκρατίας, των δικαιωμάτων, των συνταγματικά κατοχυρωμένων δικαιωμάτων. Αυτό είναι.
Εμείς οι πιο μικροί από αυτή τη γωνία του κόσμου σε χαιρετάμε.
The journey took us 3 hours. When it's 5 o'clock in the morning, Greek police saw us by their ship, big ship. We all were afraid. They took us to Turkey. So then they turned to Greek port. They took us there.
Το ένα είναι ένα πραγματικό μνημείο του νερού.
monument of hate and destruction, bidding farewell to rigid ways of thought, solutions that solve nothing, and problems only meant to destruct. Once we know what we want, we're no longer alone. The world repopulates. Everywhere there are allies, closeness, and an infinite gradation of possible friendships. Nothing is close for someone who floats. We will all be led, sooner or later, to defection and to combat.
So this was an expert of a larger composition that we did for Onassis Stei. This is a cultural center in Greece. As Giorgo said before, it was we wanted to present it here, but of course the time is always limited. It is around half an hour. It was commissioned to us by Stei, Onassis Stei and Teatro Mundi in the framework of Sonic Memory and Sonic Monumentality. There were some residences involved. And the way that this composition was made, it was entirely with non-musical elements. Everything was recorded. Everything was from soundscapes that we have recorded ourselves. Narratives of various people from interviews that we had take in the framework of Sonic Monumentality Residency and Sonic Memory Project. Some found objects that we found from YouTube, some historical moments that are meaningful for Greece and cannot be understood in this framework. Some Creative Commons sounds as well that we found from Freesound or other platforms, including the whole clip of the murder of LGBTQ activist Zach Kostopoulos in Athens, riots regarding the murder of a 15-year-old child by the police also in Athens, Alexandros Grigoropoulos. The moment when Golden Dawn, the far-right party, is proclaimed as a criminal organization and people cheer. What else? Some sounds of refugees arriving by boat, and the boat and the water, together with some demonstrations from far-right people. All these sounds were somehow included. Subcommandante Marcos saying, saluting Greek people in Greek. And as I said, narratives of various people, not from saying grand narratives, let's say big stories or historical narratives, but sharing with us little experiences. This is why also it's called récit. Like Yorgos is not does not like it, but somehow talking about the grand narrative and the petit récit of Lyotard. So we brought this here. In the conservatory, it was my first idea. This is the first thing that I said to Giuseppe when he was organizing it, how I would like to bring here this composition that is commissioned by a very big institution, but includes no musical element as well, but it was commissioned as the, at all, not musical elements at all, but was commissioned as a musical piece, and was played in an institution that has a lot to do with music, and we brought it, so here we brought it based on two needs, as I was saying. The first need was to discuss it with you and to maybe share some thoughts on how we perceived in this particular piece the confession of socially engaged music and sound composition. What does it mean to compose music in a socially engaged, let's say, intention? We have tried to include narratives from actual people. We have tried to say a story, and we try to keep the realism and not to aestheticize any of the stories that were told. And how for us this was difficult. This is a choice to be made. We didn't want to overemphasize onto any of the stories or any of the put in our own comment, let's say, in some way. Of course, picking the non-musical elements is already a comment. And all of these while trying to keep some sort of a form, which is not apparent after all. It has to be understood in a more cultural way so as to understand the form as a musical piece. And it is here, of course, deprived of the framework it was presented, and it's deprived also, you don't know of the language where all these narratives are spoken, so this is already one of the ideas. What does it mean to compose socially engaged music, and does it only function locally when you know the language? And the second need, I think Yorgos can talk about it more, but I can also say a few things in the beginning. Like, we tried to connect this with the sonic memory. The project was already called Sonic Memory and Sonic Monumentality. As I told you, there were two kind of projects. It was originally framed this way. And we were wondering how this work, based on the discussion that we can make, how this can be connected also with our work in Bier. Like, what are the elements that we could learn or that we can take as critique and use them or not use them? And I think that this applies in our work with vulnerable groups, and namely, maybe it does not apply with babies and toddlers, but I think for vulnerable groups, it's a big discussion to be made. How do we approach them if we want to approach them, let's say, in a musical way? And can music or art in general maybe be applied with all its, you know, possibilities or its fioriture, let's say, is it appropriate to approach the deaf, for example, or hard of hearing in this way? I don't know how do you want to proceed?
Maybe go back a little bit to the framework where this work stemmed from. So it began 2020-21, when it was the 100 years after 200 years. Yes, after the Greek Revolution. So there was a huge thematization within cultural politics of official institutions in Greece. The Ministry of Culture, but also Onassistei, which is one of the major private institutions, and other art groups and cultural, you know, agents about monuments and about Greekness. So an attempt to revisit all of these ideas that constitute what Greekness is. So this was our attempt. It began with questioning the idea of this grand, unified concept of Greekness, and kind of highlight different versions of it, different, you know, to undermine its solid infrastructure. So the idea of looking into sonic monuments kind of evolved through this work into sonic memory. So there are some governing questions in regards to this work. For example, what to begin with, what do monuments narrate? Or what if monuments were made of sound? What kind of sounds can we consider monumental? And of course, what is the process that mediates memory rendering it into history, in a way? What's the relation between the senses, memory, and at the end of the day, history? So within all this understanding of what was going on in Greece 2021, this year, 2022, revisiting the war between Greece and the Ottoman Empire in 1922, we kind of saw that all these minor narratives that are sort of excluded or somehow included as, you know, a reassembled fragmentation leave out exactly what we found out in the schools for, we're working in the schools for the deaf and hard of hearing. This exclusion from the sound stimuli within the deaf community, within schools of deaf and hard of hearing. The first example that we met was a scientific understanding among in a research for cochlear implant users. So this was a research we've been following that ended up in a conference where it lasted a whole day, and not once was the word deaf used. It was either cochlear implant users or the patients. So this what came about in this conference was that hearing partaking in this acoustic environment, be it monumental or is not only a matter of the senses. It's not enough to wear a cochlear implant in order to cure your deafness. It requires training, learning, generating memories in regards to hearing. To give a very brief example, if all of a sudden someone who has never heard anything wears a cochlear implant and hears a barking dog, the cognitive, the nervous system and the cognitive functions should be trained in a way to understand that this is a barking dog and it's not a thunder or someone shooting at you. So by this discussion between what Greekness is that is kind of displayed or played out through the sonic monuments, and this understanding we are gradually having within the deaf community, we also understand that up to an extent, the deaf are rather a cultural, are more of a cultural a group rather than a sensory deprived group. And what I have in mind that what we're doing in schools, who are of course excluded from all of these training and educating in regards to sound, kind of trained to be excluded from sound in a way, is kind of intervene and generate some sort of relations, initiate some new relations with sound. I don't know if Dana wants to add something about what we're up to schools, but of course, this is also a challenge for us hearing people. It's some way of processing and rethinking the way we hear and not trying to impose it to people who do not hear, to people who are deaf, trying to understand their ways with sounds, not in a canonistic or a correctional manner, but rather as ourselves being able to understand what it is to perceive or to relate with sounds by other means, by alternative means. What if all of those monuments were not understood by us in terms of auditory experience, but tactile experience? I think the excerpt of the Golden Dawn being convicted as a criminal organization took place 2 years ago, I think exactly 2 years ago, was a very good example of understanding that voicing out with the crowd is not only a matter of hearing, it's not only a matter of speaking, but a matter of vibrating with other people in a way. Getting into a sonic, auditory, verbal, oral manifestation of what it means to be together for a cause. Dana, would you like to add something to that?
I will just try to wrap it up and maybe open it to a discussion, because I think this is the most important part. What we trying to say, and I don't know if it is really connected in a way, because we just added also the deaf and hard of hearing and also a lot of things. What we're trying to say is that music represents and music describes in a way but does not depict exactly. So what we were trying to do is to think of a way where we can compose for groups of people or together with groups of people and really try to evade musicality or use musicality in some other ways that we don't know. For example, how can I play a musical work in a group of refugees or with a group of refugees and say that this music composition or this theater play or this drama thing represents your problem? I think it becomes very aestheticized. This is why we try to use non-musical elements all the way, or without saying that this is the best way that could be used. Of course, it's not the best way that could be used. This is just bringing this to the table. And the same also applies to our thoughts of how we work with the deaf and hard of hearing. For example, we are working also in this semester, but in the previous semesters, I work a lot with vibrations, you know. This is not musical in the traditional sense, and we don't know exactly how it will apply the final result to hearing people, you know. So what would it sound if we were to write a composition for the deaf and hard of hearing that does not try to bridge the two worlds, you know, but to represent only the experience of the deaf in the world of hearing? And it is something that we still haven't figured out, I guess, through our whole research and the lovely things that we hear from everybody. We will figure out, probably, like, to some extent. And this is what we wanted to bring to the table today. I hope you enjoyed it in some way. I know it's very early, but at least we had the time to listen to and relax a little bit with this relaxed performance that we learned from the Canadian residents.
I also really hope it initiates questions, but if not, it's also.
No, that's it. That's all.
Thank you. So, questions.
Thank you very much. I have actually two questions. The first one is a very easy question. How long is this piece, actually?
It's 30 minutes.
30 minutes. Did you ever play it entirely to the audience aimed to?
Yeah, it was installed because it was a part of a larger exhibition, and then it was played as a performance. I would just listen to it in half an hour, and then there was a discussion.
Yes, and I have in mind deaf people. Can they somehow participate or experience this kind of piece for 30 minutes?
I'm sorry, you asked if they experienced it the whole...
I'm specifically asking about deaf people, if they are capable of following this kind of easy composition for 30 minutes.
No, definitely not.
Yes, this is another question I might have, because it reminds me, when you mentioned this easy performance and easy composition, it is a variant of easy writing or easy reading. That means reading or writing made for people who have problems in understanding of texts, and you make it simplified. Easy reading is the term in English for this. And it seems in music and in sound composition we have a very similar approach and very similar issue to cope with, and I'm very fascinated with your work, I have to say, because Panos explained me in years about your activities, and I think it is something marvelous. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Other questions? No. Raska, yes.
I might have misunderstood some part of the presentation. I love it a lot. I mean, I evoke a lot of questions, but I would really ask, I mean, because what do you mean by easy composition? I mean, I'm not sure if I understand the term, so that would be my first, not question, but...
easy performance, relaxed performance, you would say. Like, it's not a very strict way of addressing a performance. But more of a loose thing. I mean, we're not like all ears here. I mean, it didn't work, to be honest. It didn't work. Nobody went out, even if it's early in the morning, because we're kind of trained that now this is a space where when we have a conference and everybody has to be disciplined. Everybody needs to be disciplined. So what if someone is in distress? Someone is claustrophobic? Someone has I don't know what happens in the States, like this thing in the in the diagnostics of psychologists that you cannot focus for too long, and so kids need to be, you know, pilled up.
We're also talking about Tourette syndrome.
Eh? Ah, Tourette syndrome also, yeah. That was all these things that kind of make it easier for people that have a thing of with,
so,
you know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. So if I understand, you're talking about the context of listening, you know, not the composition itself. Because I'm asking, because what I heard when I entered the space, for me it was a complex composition. You know, it was not an easy composition at all. You know, it was well made, it has dramaturgical arc, it was very skilled, to say so, you know, so I could not really connect to the, you know, easy composition as a term, but if you are talking about the context in which, you know, you present the work of listening, then I think that is really a great way, you know, how you invite people to listen to something, yeah, so that's just because I was a little bit confused about what does the term mean and how it's used. And another thing that evoked my really like a lot of questions and a process, thinking process, was that you said, you asked the question how to use musicality, and then I'm not sure if I understood right, but I think there was something in relation to not in an aestheticized way. Did you say something like that, yeah?
Yeah, this is one of the... of the terms I use a lot, aestheticization. It's for me, it's one of the things that we're trying a lot not to do dealing with art, like let's say co-create with people, or create for people, or create with people that have a specific problems, issues, disabilities as well, and to try to do this in an aestheticized way, like a glorified art that in a sense does not concern their actual problem. You know, it's like there are two ways of dealing with somehow socially engaged art. Because sometimes aesthetics, especially in music, but also in art, you know, the beautification of things, or the depiction of things in a beautified way, or in a way that is nice to watch, sometimes does not match the actual reality of some people. And there are always balances that should be kept, because I don't also like to, you know, blackmail, to manipulate the feeling of people, like trying to grasp you. But also, we don't like to be, to have the balance of aesthetics and beauty that is more than the actual problems. I don't know if I'm explaining it well. I think not.
No, I think I understand, but for me it's like, because it's a question I'm asking myself very often also, you know, because again, I think we kind of get trapped into this to some extent, at least I do, you know, because again, you know, when I listen to your composition, for me it was aestheticized, you know, you did not just put something there, you know, it did not really disturb me in any way because of the thickness of the material or because of the length of it or because of the sound, you know, it was it was organized to say so, you know, maybe it was not, you know, and the question, what is beautiful or what is pleasurable, you know, I mean, it depends from each individual, you know, so I don't know, I'm making like a very improvised connections, but yesterday when we were listening, or the first day, the operas for children, you know, I mean, this material was aestheticized to some extent, but it was also protecting, I think, the children during their performance, because if you would just put them there, you know, saying, okay, we want them to make anything out of it because we just want to represent, you know, their working, their daily life, I think they would be more vulnerable than if someone could take care about the structure. You know, and I don't know, I mean, it's just an open question that I always ask
myself. No, absolutely. Actually, I said this also, that this may not apply for children, for babies and toddlers, but for the vulnerable groups more, you know, because I had in my mind what Katarina, for example, was showing us, or the work that you did in the park. And, well, it's not that aesthetics or musicality should be abolished altogether, you know. I mean, I grew up in this environment, and this was my first study to learn music, for example, or to learn art and to be able to understand the world in an aestheticized way. But how do I deal with this also in real life? And if we do something like a composition, does it concern other people, especially other people that are not culturally, for example, Western people or culturally white people? Does it concern them to see music, to make a composition, for example, for them that is, you know, aestheticized in a Western way? I mean, I don't know. There are many, many, many questions there. Working in the society, I mean, like you said, and I don't have an answer either. I will probably never have.
Well, thank you very much. This was really very exciting to hear, although it was just an excerpt, or whatever is the word. Well, I'm just wondering, I mean, aestheticize or aesthetic doesn't mean to embellish, to make beautiful. It means to make aesthetic, it means to organize, it means to articulate, it means to intervene in a certain point. That's a quality, but it's not a qualification. In regard to that, I have to tell you that I was really deeply distressed by what I've heard, especially from the side of the monumentality. Actually, what we comprehend is monumental. And if it is the masses moving, then I'm really afraid. I mean, it really made me afraid. On the other hand, I just wanted to share this so you would know how people perceive it. And it was short, and we were in a safer environment, okay? But still. And the other thing is, I wanted to praise you for the concept, and I didn't want this to go unsaid. The concept of revisiting, let's say, the national identity. Because I also believe that the complex side of any identity should be searched, should be researched, and should be made, not to say visible, but known, against simplifying, which we all know where can it can get us. So thank you very much once again.
Thank you so much, Sunchita.
Okay. Thank you, Dana and Yorgos. Thank you. All is ready.